Okay, I'm with Brenna Finley, candidate for Iowa Attorney General. Hi, Brenna.
Hi.
So, you were telling us before I turned this on that you're having a good week, that you've been out to Eastern Iowa.
That's
right. There's been a lot of enthusiasm. Yeah. What are some of the types of things you've been hearing from supporters about this campaign?
Sure. In Eastern Iowa, I see the same level of enthusiasm that we've seen in Western Iowa and in the rural areas where I know more people. Mm-hmm. And so it's exciting to see that kind of enthusiasm from people that I'm just getting to know, like in Davenport and Dubuque and Cedar Falls, Waterloo. And probably the best thing that I've been hearing is when somebody comes up to me and says, "This is the first year I've been involved. What can I do to help you?" That is exciting because that means we're bringing new people into the office, into the process, and that that energy is what's going to make all the difference.
Great. No, yeah. I saw you at NICHE's last weekend.
Yes,
and for those of you who don't know, it's Network of Iowa Christian Home Educators, and I didn't know that you were a homeschooler.
Yes, I sure was.
So how did that form your getting into politics?
And
I mean, what was that like for you?
Yeah, well, I mean, especially for the Office of Attorney General, it's very important to have a solid educational background, and I have that from homeschooling and then college at Drake and law school at the University of Chicago, and I rely on my education every day for what I do. It was good because when you're homeschooled, there are a couple different things that are a little different than the public schools. One is you have to know the right answer to every question because there's nobody else in the classroom to raise their hand and answer a question if you don't know. So I was able to learn more that way. And also the self-discipline involved when you're studying on your own. It's something that college students learn when they go to college. Mm-hmm. But as a homeschool student, I was able to learn that in eighth grade when I started being homeschooled.
Well, now, did your mom introduce you to constitutional law when you were
sure.
in high school?
Sure. Well, through history, yeah. Okay. And I also studied constitutional law as well. So enjoyed that. And that's one of the reasons that I went to law school, because I wanted to stand up for the Constitution. And because I realize when I look at our Constitution and history, America is a unique country. Our Constitution is a tremendous gift that's been given to us. And we want to keep that alive for every generation so they can all have the same freedom that we have.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, you've had kind of an unusual, as far as experience leading up to this candidacy.
Mm-hmm.
You were chief of staff for Congressman King.
Right.
What made you decide, I'm going to run for attorney general?
Yeah. Well, because I want to stand up for the law and constitution, and I want to serve as the legal watchdog and lawyer for Iowans. And I care about what happens in our state, and it's hard for me to watch the things that have been happening lately with 115,000 people out of work.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do everything we can to create a small business, jobs-friendly attorney general's office so that we can bring jobs to Iowa and put people back to work. And I can do that by keeping an eye out for regulations that hurt small businesses and also keeping an eye on our litigation climate.
Okay, so that, having a pro-business environment, that's one of your top priorities. What are
it's one of them. Also standing up for the Constitution. I would join the lawsuit by 20 other states to stand up against the government takeover of healthcare, because that takes away our freedom when people are forced to buy a certain kind of insurance or face IRS penalty. I think it's wrong. I think it's unconstitutional. And as Attorney General, I would stand up and defend Iowans.
Okay. What would be some of your other priorities?
Sure. Well, I think we need more sunshine and accountability in state government.
Okay.
Right now, many people don't know what their state government is up to, and it's hard to get access to that information. So I'd have a better website that Iowans can go to from anywhere in the state so they can find out just what the Attorney General's office is up to. And the other thing I would do, and this is where I differ significantly from the incumbent, is he would allow the government to charge people who request public records for the time of the government worker that they spend reviewing the request.
Okay.
I think it's okay to charge for copies. I don't think it's okay to charge for the time of the government worker, because the taxpayer has already paid the salary of that government worker. They shouldn't have to pay twice. And so I would not allow those kinds of charges. I think they discourage public records requests, and I think they're public records. The public is entitled to them and should only have to pay for the copies.
Now, that just made me think about something that recently happened in Alaska, suddenly getting flooded. I'm sure you probably are aware of that. Suddenly all these FOIA requests and ethics claims and, you know, wanting records, and it's like you just overwhelm them.
Yeah.
Not that I think that's going to happen here, but what about somebody who seems to be habitual?
Well, the fundamental question is, who do they work for? Mm-hmm. They work for the taxpayers. And if they're requesting a public record and they're willing to pay for the photocopies and the records request complies with the law and they're entitled to it under the law, they should be able to get that.
Okay.
It may not always be easy to have an open and accountable government, but I think it's the right thing to do.
Okay. Now, you're wanting to challenge Obamacare via the, you know, that lawsuit that's going on. What is your view in relation to the 10th Amendment, state sovereignty? Where is that applied? Where shouldn't it be applied?
Sure. Well, the strongest constitutional argument in the government-run takeover of healthcare is the Commerce Clause argument. And that's the argument that I would focus on. I would also make the 10th Amendment argument, but the Commerce Clause argument is much stronger because Congress doesn't have the power to force a private person to buy a private product from a private party.
Mm-hmm.
And they claim they have it under the Interstate Commerce Clause, but they don't, because the Interstate Commerce Clause regulates commerce between the states.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't regulate someone's decision not to engage in commerce. If that were to be the case, then Congress could regulate commerce and not commerce. And at some point you wonder, what is there anything that Congress can't regulate under their definition of the Commerce Clause? It looks like there isn't. It's an expansive reading that would take away our liberty and our freedoms. And so I think that is the strongest argument for government-run health care to be unconstitutional. The other piece with the 10th Amendment, you're right. The Constitution delineates the powers of the federal government, and those are called the enumerated powers, and it reserves the rest to the people and to the states. And it seems that right now, with the way our government is headed, the federal government wants to take on more and more power, and they seem to have forgotten about the people and the states, and I think it's time for the people and the states to take back some of their power.
Yeah, well, I look at the whole, this federalism, and the beauty of federalism is if, the states want to experiment, different things, they're free to do that, and
right.
we're free to move.
Yeah. Alexander Hamilton, didn't he talk about laboratories of democracy?
Mm-hmm.
And that concept was that each state could have a laboratory of democracy with different policies, and you're right, citizens would be free to move, and states would be free to innovate.
Okay. Obviously, a big thing on minds a lot of voters come November is the ruling made by the Iowa Supreme Court back in April. You knew I was probably going to get to this.
Sure, sure. What's a hot topic?
Yeah. I'm just kind of, I'm curious, how do you view the ruling? Was it a sound legal ruling? What would be the role of the Attorney General in this process? And if county recorders refuse to abide by that ruling based on conscience, what would be your approach?
Okay. I want to take it back one step even earlier than the premise of your question, and that is, it's the Attorney General's job to defend the law and Constitution of the state of Iowa. They're the top legal advocate for the Iowa taxpayers. But when it came to the marriage issue, and I'll say I support marriage between one man and one woman, the current Attorney General refused to defend our Defense of Marriage Act in court. And I think that had an effect on the process, and we saw a unanimous Supreme Court decision mandating same-sex marriage in Iowa. As your Attorney General, I would have defended our Defense of Marriage Act in court. And I do think it makes a difference whether your lawyer is doing the job or not.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And so I would have been glad to do that. At this point, I think the best thing that we can do is for the legislature to pass the marriage amendment so the people can have a vote and we can have a say in the matter.
Okay.
And then when you're getting to the issue of, you asked about the county recorders, I think it was a heavy-handed tactic on the part of the current Attorney General to threaten removal from office for those county recorders. County recorders are always just trying to do their job to the best of their ability, and I think it was unfair to make them a political pawn in the political game that was going on at the time. Also, the Attorney General does not have the power to remove county, duly elected county officials at will.
Yeah.
There's a procedure that has to be gone through for that, and I don't think that a county recorder in that instance, that it would rise to the level required by the statute, that they would have a hearing and be removed from office.
Okay. I'm just thinking, worst case, probably somebody could go to a different county recorder's office if they needed to. I don't know marriage laws in that regard, but now, your view, I'm assuming you've read the ruling.
Sure I have.
What was your opinion of the ruling?
Well, I think probably the most troubling phrase in the Supreme Court decision was when it talked about rights that were heretofore unimagined. Our system is not built on imaginary rights that are discovered. Our system is built on timeless rights that belong to every person. And that is, that's a concern, because if the Supreme Court can imagine and unimagine rights from year to year, what protects the people?
Yeah, very true. The whole marriage thing, I've always said it could be a slippery slope. Mm-hmm. What can we allow next? You know, what other kind of behavior suddenly will be codified? Well, that reminds me of a follow-up question.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
There's things in my life I wouldn't want to see codified, or, you know, mistakes I've made.
Sure,
I wouldn't
want
to see it be protected and necessarily under the law. Now, there's a whole debate about whether or not the Supreme Court's ruling is now deemed law.
Mm-hmm.
What's your position on that?
Well, that's a question with a lot of different facets, so let me try to answer it as best I can. If you have any follow-up to that, just let me know.
Okay.
It's up to the legislature to make our marriage laws, and what we saw here after the Supreme Court ruling was that the legislature refused to act or failed to act. When it failed to act, it left behind its responsibility on the issue. I will say that when the Supreme Court issues a ruling, it does apply certainly to the parties in the case, mm-hmm. and that ruling, they did declare the law to be unconstitutional, and we can read the ruling and see the reasoning that they used to try to support that conclusion. So I'm not one of these people that thinks we can just ignore what one branch of government does.
Okay.
The way our Constitution is written, though, our Iowa Constitution is modeled in many ways on the federal Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
And when you read the Iowa Constitution, it's clear which branch is the strongest branch in our government.
Mm-hmm.
It's the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's up to the legislature to act and to correct the situation.
Okay. All right. Moving on to a different topic, I work with high-risk kids for a living. I'm just kind of curious as far as your position on, there's been hot button. We've had, for instance, the young man down in Sheraton, 12-year-old, who shot his stepfather. Some people are saying he needs to be tried as an adult,
mm-hmm.
you know, the full extent of the law.
Right.
What's your position in juveniles in the adult system?
Sure. I think with every case, each case has to be looked at individually,
mm-hmm.
and the individual circumstances, the people involved, and I think that we should be careful when we analyze those situations to make sure that if it's appropriate to try a juvenile as an adult, we do that, but if it's inappropriate, that the prosecutors would realize that and use their prosecutorial discretion
mm-hmm.
in order to try them through the juvenile system rather than as an adult. So it really depends on the facts of each individual
mm-hmm.
situation, and it's certainly a very sad situation when we have children that are accused of committing those
mm-hmm.
types of crimes.
Okay. People are also talking about bringing back or wanting to bring institute capital punishment
yeah.
in Iowa.
Yeah.
What's your position there?
If the legislature were to pass a capital punishment
mm-hmm.
law,
mm-hmm.
I would enforce it.
Okay.
But it's not something that I've made part of my campaign.
Okay.
There are some criminal changes that I think we do need to make. One of them has to do with, people call it child pornography, but really it's photographs depicting the sexual abuse of children.
Mm-hmm.
And in Iowa, it's only a serious misdemeanor
mm-hmm.
under state law. I think it should be a felony like it is at the federal level.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's a change that I would strongly recommend. We need to protect children from sex predators, and it should be a felony in Iowa to do that sort of thing. The other thing is that right now, under a ruling that the Iowa Supreme Court has, they define an offense as a group of photographs rather than each photograph individually
mm-hmm.
or image. Federal law, they can be charged for each individual image. So that also lessens the penalty on sex predators.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need strong penalties on sex predators. We need to protect our children from that kind of exploitation.
Okay, now with sexual offenders too, I'm thinking about another question. You know, the whole where they can live
right.
has been a huge contentious issue here in Iowa. Do you think the current law is fair? Because I know in some communities it's like, where to put it.
I
with some kids that I've worked with, and unfortunately some have been
mm-hmm.
part of, they've been registered, trying to, when they come out, I mean, they can't live at home.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to find a place to live.
Right.
So you think that needs to be addressed?
Well, I think that's really up to the legislature to make those kinds of changes. as Attorney General, if the legislature would ask me for my opinion about how to write a law so that it could accomplish the goals that they were hoping to accomplish, I would work with them.
Okay.
But I think that really is something that is left to the legislature to determine.
Okay. All right. Is there anything, I'm running out of questions.
Sure.
So is there anything that you would like to share that we haven't discussed?
The only thing I would say is that in my campaign, I've been working hard to get to every corner of the state.
Okay.
And listen to people, hear what they need from their attorney general, because I want to work for them as their lawyer. And I find as I travel the state that many of them don't know who the current attorney general is.
Okay. So he's not getting around.
He is not getting around. I have yet to meet him on the campaign trail or find out that he's been on the campaign trail.
Well, he seems to be slacking even in the fundraising department.
True. We have outraised him twice so far this year, and we're trying to do our best to do it a third time. We're working hard, and I don't take any vote for granted. I want to earn it and want to do my best to represent Iowans as their attorney, and that's why I'm doing my best to meet them so that I can audition for the job. And one thing that a lot of people ask me about on the campaign trail is how old I am.
Uh-huh.
And I know we've talked about this before, but that's a good selling point in my race.
Okay.
Because I'm the same age, I'm 34, uh-huh. the same age the current attorney general was in 1978.
Okay.
He ran for attorney general and beat the incumbent. So,
So maybe history will repeat itself.
I think history is going to repeat itself. Turns out there's a lucky age to be running for attorney general.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for working me in.
No problem.